The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
I'm joined by Liz Carolan, tech and democracy strategist, TheBriefing.ie, Roderick O'Gorman, Green Party leader, and from the US, Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports, because we talked about it briefly during the news discussion earlier on, but the murder of Charlie Kirk during the week has highlighted the rising threat of violence that exists within America. But it has also not only highlighted, but further catalyzed the rampant division that now defines American discourse. Paul Brandis, to start with you, there used to be a sort of a cliche, a general method of approach that said that in moments of extreme violence or horror, the first thing you did is you said, look, let us not politicize this, but treat it on its merits as tragedy or whatever else it might be. In this instance, the opposite has happened. This has been ruthlessly politicized almost from the moment of his death.
I think that's right. You had this initial condemnations from both sides, but we've now seen, as you just mentioned, Anton, this more partisan retreat into familiar corners with both left and right attacking the other over these growing levels of violence. But I think that there's some selective amnesia here. President Trump yesterday, for example, on one of the TV networks here, said that, well, violence from the left has got to stop. It's just gotten out of hand. They're vicious, while neglecting to mention the even longer list of attacks that have come from the right, a kidnap plot against one governor, the setting on fire of another governor's home and others. That's just two examples. Trump also mocked the assault on the San Francisco House of former House Speaker Pelosi, that kind of thing. So the selective amnesia is really just, and Trump's base, of course, millions and millions of people, they key off of what he says. So when he says the violence from the left has got to stop, of course, everybody parrots that, but nobody on the right acknowledges the violence that comes from their own sides here. So Trump is part of the problem here, not really talking about how both sides have to stop it.
Now, one of the things that has been said repeatedly is that Charlie Kirk was a victim of murder for having simply spoken words, that you may not have liked his ideas, but that all he did was share ideas. And there have been some who have pointed out that the speaking of ideas can lead to the fomentation of violence, can lead to certain... To what extent can you connect the kind of rhetoric that has defined US politics with the growing violence? Is there a direct line between the two, do you think, Paul?
Well, some people think there are. I think that there are several issues. There's a lot to unwind from that question. And I think, for example, that social media is a huge problem because you have, I don't mean to be rude, but there are a lot of Americans who are illiterate in certain ways. They literally don't read books. They get all their information from social media, from Facebook and TikTok and so forth. So it's this sort of a cesspool of a platforms that really provide the only information that people get about politics and words being spoken and that kind of thing. So it really is just a really easy, cheap way of getting people riled up and angry. And I don't think there's a very long line between getting up and angry and, you know, taking violence. I mean, you connect that with the fact that this is a gun-loving country. There are more guns in this country than there are people in this country. It's just a recipe for all kinds of trouble. So, yeah, I think there is a connection.
What then do you think the impact of the Kirk killing will be in that dynamic? Things worsen?
Well, obviously, let me just say off the top, I certainly hope not. But there have been a variety of bomb threats against certain individuals in the last couple of days. I think that will eventually die down. But beneath the surface, if there's some kind of calm that emerges in the next couple of days after the funeral, it may appear to be calm. But underneath that, I think there's just this boiling water, boiling, stew of anger that could erupt at any moment. So I don't really see it going away. But that being said, I'll tell you something else about social media, if you'll indulge me just for a couple of seconds here. You know, you have this impression that it's a deeply divided country, that there's the far right and there's the far left and there's nothing in between. I actually think that if you look at polls that ask people, do you identify as a Republican or a Democrat, for the first time ever in this country, Anton, and I think this is significant, there is a majority of Americans for the first time ever that now identify as neither Republican or Democrat, but as an independent. 51% of the country, only about 25% say they're either Republican or Democrat. And yet they're the ones getting all the attention. They're just louder. They're more violent and that kind of thing. So it's a little bit deceptive in some regards in terms of just how violent and upset the country are. There's a huge block of people in the middle who I think are just fed up with the extremism from both parties in this country. So it's interesting. And that's something that I don't think is getting enough attention.
Stay with us, Paul. Liz Carolyn, let me bring you in, publisher of the briefing.ie. The suggestion that Paul is making, that much of this is driven by social media and will continue to be driven by social media, is that a view that you would share?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's two parts to this. Paul mentioned just this increasing extreme stream of content that people can be exposed to, in particular when you have kind of algorithmic driven content. So, you know, we all know, you if you Google, I want to buy a lawnmower, suddenly there's lawnmowers everywhere on the internet. It can be kind of similar, you know, if you're like, well, what's this thing about that's happening in the news? And if you're going in one particular direction, the content that you're shown can be pushing you more and more in one particular direction. But I think there's something kind of additional which seems to be happening. And I think the Charlie Kirk case is probably one of the most extreme things of this. But we're now at the point where, you know, social media platforms are incentivizing more and more extreme content to such an extent that you basically have performative violence nearly as a form of creating content. So, you know, if we look at what happened in the US last week, you could look at that assassination as one which was designed to generate huge amounts of video, huge amounts of like really quite extreme content that would go very well, to the point where the assassin was, you know, etching memes onto bullet casings, you know, almost designed to kind of send Reddit down a rabbit hole. And you know, and we saw this in Ireland to a much lesser extent, but during the local elections in particular last year, you had candidates being attacked verbally, sometimes physically on the street, all to be filmed, all for this process of creating content so that the people creating it would get attention, that they'd get virality, that people would be talking about them. And it's becoming this weird bi-directional relationship where, you know, it's not just that people are being pushed into these holes, it's that the holes are, you know, encouraging and creating incentives, mostly for frankly, you know, people who are kind of struggling in other ways, I imagine, but for people to be performing violence as an act of content creation, which really dark.
To some extent, Radhika Gorman, you yourself were victim of. You've had that kind of thing where people have been extraordinarily and egregiously abusive to you and then happily posted the results.
Yeah, just you mentioned the local elections, Liz. I dropped down to my GPs in Blanchardstown one day just before the campaign and came out, and one of the local election candidates was hiding behind the hedge, and the camera came straight out, and herself and another person followed me down the street, kind of shouting at me and recording. So I think I think that is interesting, that there is this kind of design now around trying to generate the most outrageous, the most controversial piece, and then using that, and I suppose particularly in the context of the local and general election, using that to try and drive fundraising, because immediately we saw on that particular candidate there was a link to fundraising, and you know, here's my fundraising account, and then to try and generate wider publicity as well. And I think that comes back to the point that both Liz and Paul made in terms of the impact that social media is having on political violence. There's always been violence linked to politics, but the sheer scale of it now, Paul has listed a range of incidents in the United States. We've seen two British MPs have been killed in the last 8 years, again, due to political violence. And even this week, we saw what the Tarnished and his family has had to
Can I devil's advocate that a bit? Yeah. Because I'm sure there will be people who will say, look, we had Robert Kennedy, we had John F. Kennedy, we had an attempted assassination on Ronald Reagan, you had the assassination of Martin Luther King, you had the kind of entrenched violence, endemic violence from people like the Unabomber, from people like the Oklahoma City bombings. There have been violence at the heart of American discourse and American politics for decades.
I think it's the scale. Paul spoke of the attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband, the attack on two governors, the murder of two legislators in Minnesota. It's the scale in the United States and the scale here. The regularity with which politicians' homes are now targeted, the regularity with which politicians are targeted on the street, and not with, you know, robust debate. It's far beyond that. But again,
which, by the way, is one of the things we were talking before the break about the Leo Varadkar memoir. He cites in that discovering that there was a liquid being held in one of the cars of his Garda Protection because they feared that he might be attacked with acid and that it was a real verifiable threat. So it has sort of become the norm for senior officials, it would seem.
It has become that norm too often. And I suppose the question is, what are the steps that we can take? You know, the internet is obviously a massive resource for us all, but trying to some way stem that sheer volume of violent content that everybody sees. One of the things I've been speaking about this week is just looking at the recommender systems that the platforms used to direct that content. Again, Liz made the point, the intensity of material that a person can see can change very suddenly. Material that, you know, glamorizes eating disorders or romanticizes suicides for young children, for example. That material is very easily available. And because these algorithms, these recommender systems, identify what you're interested in and basically build a profile of you, very suddenly a young person, a vulnerable adult, can suddenly find that their feed is made up of nothing but one sort of content. And I fear that's having a real impact. And if we could turn those recommender systems off, it's not going to solve everything, but I think it will dilute, I suppose, the intensity of
the... Well, on that, one of one of the most interesting and worrying parts of the social media is the tailored nature of each person's feed fed directly to the individual. The Charlie Kirk murder highlights this. I'd say most people didn't know who he was, which seems at odds with the amount of people lionizing him. Surely, though, the thing is, Liz, that if anybody in officialdom goes to any of the social media companies and says, we want you to change your algorithms, the answer is not a chance, and we have the support of the US administration.
It's how they make money. It's the kind of cornerstone of the business model, which is why the lobbying around this question has been exceptionally intense. We're now at a point in Brussels where tech companies are bigger lobbyists than you know, the fossil fuels, than pharma, than anybody else. But we do have an opportunity coming up. The EU is now looking at something called the Democracy Shield, which is actually our own Commissioner McGrath within his portfolio. And there are a lot of people who are looking at that as an opportunity to say to the companies, you know, you just need to turn off the algorithm. You just need to let people see the content that they're choosing to see. You need to...
But bang goes the business model if you do that, surely?
Well, I mean, if the business model is at the point where it's so reliant on this type of toxicity, maybe it's time to find new business models or to think of other ways of making money.
Let me bring in Paul Brandis on that, because Paul, you were making the point earlier on about the growth in the people who are viewing themselves as independent. Does that impact the discourse? Because presumably the politicians are still incentivized to go in the dialogue to the extremes, and the social media companies, their algorithms are rooted and their business models are rooted in fostering and amplifying those extremes.
Well, on the social media point, I think Liz made a really good point. And the problem with that is that it's what butters the bread for these companies, Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram and all the others. They have huge lobbying armies, not just in Brussels, but here in Washington. And what we've seen is, if you remember, after the attack on the Capitol back on the January 6th, 2021, a lot of these companies kind of went along with the popular sentiment at the time, and they kicked Trump off of Twitter, well, X as it's now called. They kicked him off that. They kicked him off of Facebook. They said this guy is just too much. But now, of course, he's back in power, and he's back on these platforms at will. So they're playing to the power here, and they are afraid to make any changes because, one, there's just too much money involved, and two, they're sensitive to cries of censorship. Well, we can't do anything about this because we have freedom of speech in this country. We really, our hands are tied and that kind of thing. So they're really washing their hands of any responsibility in terms of what is shown and shared with the American people. It's really just a very selfish, greedy view. So that's the first thing. What was the other part of your question? I forget whether the independents are really the group.
Well, whether or not if everybody involved in politics is so incentivized to go to the extremes, both the social media companies and the politicians in electoral terms, is there any prospect of the fact that there are so many independents leavening the violence and hatred in the discourse, or is it doomed?
Well, there are a couple of things to that. I mean, one, when you look what I mentioned, that more people now identify as independents, there are that kind of those kind of numbers are also seen in polling on other issues that we presume to be divisive, but really are not. Most Americans, including most Republicans, by the way, most Republican voters say, for example, that that we need stronger forms of gun control. You don't hear that on Fox News. They support more wind and solar energy, that kind of thing. You don't hear about those things in the halls of Congress, though, because there are two parties that are so far on the extreme and are so bought by lobbyists of fossil fuel companies and the NRA, the big gun lobby, and those kind of things. They simply buy out these politicians, and it's very hard for other voices to really be heard. And that plays into the way we hold elections here. The vast majority of the 435 seats in Congress, for example, are so gerrymandered that there's really no competition. So it's very hard for, say, an independent candidate to really break through and be heard. So it's really almost a hammerlock of politicians who are bought, lobbyists from these big companies, to really, almost everyone else is shut out. So I don't really know what the way out of that is. Elon Musk has talked about financing a third party, but there's been talk of that kind of thing by other people for years, and nothing has happened. So we're in this vicious circle. I hate to say downward spiral, but I really don't see what the way out of it is. It's just very, I think, very dangerous and debilitating situation.
Paul, thanks for joining us this morning. Paul Brandis of West Wing Reports. Likewise, thank you very much to Liz Carolyn, publisher of TheBriefing.ie. Roderick O'Gorman, Green Party leader, just before I let you go, the Irish Times are reporting there was that incursion during the week of Russian military drones over Polish territory, which is being perceived as an attempt to test NATO and NATO's resilience. The Romanian Defense Department saying that they had scrambled fighter jets after drones reported in airspace during an attack on Ukraine. Worrying?
Deeply worrying. I've no doubt Russia today will announce in the next couple of minutes that it is again Ukraine doing a false flag operation. This kind of denial approach from the Kremlin is something we've seen earlier this week. But it does, I suppose, completely undermine the signals that President Putin has been given to President Trump in terms of trying to actually bring about some agreement here. There's no plan for agreement. Trump is being played, and I think it's more and more clear that the Russian army, the Russian leadership, are determined to continue this level of violence.
And of course, Romania, both an EU member state and a NATO member state. Do you see this as further attempts to test NATO resilience?
I think it's likely. I think it's a further attempt to maybe undermine the unity that has been shown, particularly across the European Union, with only maybe one or two countries more aligning themselves towards Putin. Obviously, we know that Russia tried very significantly to interfere with the recent Romanian presidential election, which actually led to the first round of that being annulled by that country's Supreme Court. So it's further evidence of what Russia is trying to do, and further, I suppose, evidence of the democracy shields that Liz was talking about earlier on. One of its key goals is to stop foreign manipulation and interference into elections, and why it's so important that that is done, but also why what we've been talking about in turning off those recommender systems is part of that piece of legislation.
Roderick, thank you. Roderick O'Gorman.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.